Software-defined WAN is a more complicated conversation than optimizing routing over multiple circuit types. Modern SD-WAN solutions bring in security, high availability, multi-tenancy, deep application recognition, and even integration with other tech in addition to that fancy routing. Talking to us today about Juniper's SD-WAN solution is Tony Sarathchandra, Director, Product Management, Software-Defined Networking Technology and Solutions. Very fancy, long title there. And Juniper is our sponsor on today's episode. Tony, it is very nice to have you on.
Great to be with you as well. Look forward to the discussion.
Oh, excellent. Okay, Tony, so I think a lot of folks maybe didn't know that Juniper had an SD-WAN solution. But I think what's actually happened is that Juniper's had the software-defined routing tech and been using it in various ways, but waited kind of until now to productize it for the SD-WAN use case. And that's because the SD-WAN use case has evolved. And so there's a good match of market need to Juniper technology. And I guess I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. And maybe I don't even have the whole story right. So let's back up a second here and do some level setting. Now, in the early days, the SD-WAN pitch, that it was all about saving money. But the story is so much more complicated now as enterprise networks evolve. So give me the Juniper perspective here. What's changing and how is that impacting SD-WAN products?
Yeah, great question. So we're starting to see now, particularly in the enterprise, the second wave of SD-WAN deployments, right? For the last 2 to 3 years, we've had, I would say, the first wave. And we're seeing now where mission-critical enterprises like large financials, manufacturing and healthcare providers, et cetera, are looking to go beyond trials of, you know, 10, 20, 30 sites to a much more broader based production deployments of hundreds, if not thousands of sites, right? Juniper has really been focused around is three key pillars, you know, when we were approaching it from a Juniper perspective. The first is routing, right? And that is kind of the core pillar that, you know, I think, you know, you have to do SD-WAN well. The second is you have to have VPN technology, right? And that's the second pillar that we kind of focus around. And the third pillar is security. And I'll touch on each of these as we go through, but these are kind of the three key pillars that sort of we've been sort of building our SD-WAN solution around. And we really focused around the second wave of build-outs that I referred to, which is going beyond the initial market trials to much more broader-based deployments.
So, okay, so in those broader-based deployments, you've got this these evolving needs. Would you categorize SD-WAN as nice to have, or have we actually moved into need to have?
So I would certainly agree with you, you know, Ethan, that it's, you know, moving certainly or have moved from a nice to have to a need to have. We're seeing customers from verticals, from manufacturing to government, right, that are evaluating and looking at rolling this technology out in a much more broad-based fashion. So I would certainly agree with you that it's much more of a need to have at this point in time in the market.
Yeah.
But do you think this, I think it's strategic though. People definitely don't see maintaining their existing networks, you know, this idea of putting a router in and, you know, routing from left to right. And then that's a WAN. I think there's definitely a sense that there's a new type of enterprise WAN out there that people want to have.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the key difference that I think we bring to the picture is we have both, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to do traditional routing, and we see a lot of customers say, hey, you know, I want a traditional routing solution, but I want to future-proof that if I want to move to SD-WAN, I need to be able to do that with the minimal of disruption, right? Hmm. So I think, you know, from our perspective, we can certainly provide both. And, you know, every enterprise customer will, I think, go through their own, self-discovery, if you will, based on their own business needs and the ability for the business to move at a certain pace. You know, not necessarily the pace of the market per se. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We try to address and we intend to address all aspects of that spectrum when it comes to, you know, specific customer requirements.
Tony, we mentioned near the top of the show here, Juniper hasn't been in the SD-WAN conversation that much, but it's not because you didn't have the technology. So what were you doing with the technology? What was your SD-WAN approach in the past?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've always had the technology. I think, you know, what's kind of net new here is that we put it together in a fashion that is completely automated and controller driven, right? So if you look at, you know, the key building blocks of the three technology pillars that I mentioned earlier, routing, VPN, and security, that has been there from day one, right? And what we've introduced in the last, you know, 2 years or so is we've pulled that together with a controller and an orchestrator-based mechanism that provides a full automation for the end-to-end setup and configuration of the SD-WAN overlay, right? But what's important to understand, I think, here is, you know, if you talk about technology, you know, we haven't reinvented the wheel. We've actually leveraged some of the core technologies that Juniper had innovated right from the get-go, right? So if you look at routing, we use BGP as the overlay routing protocol of choice for all reachability management across the SD-WAN overlay, multi-protocol BGP, in fact. And if you look at VPN, our SD-WAN overlay is basically based on, you know, your, you know, RFC 4364 or your legacy 2547 L3 VPN construct. But we've implemented that in an IPsec overlay that is completely automated and managed by the SD-WAN controller, right? And if you look at security, we've had, you know, L7 security in our portfolio for, you know, best part of 10 years now. But we've integrated SD-WAN with our security so that the two worked in concert in integrated fashion through an existing policy or a completely integrated policy framework, right? So we really brought all these three key pieces together. So from a customer perspective, it's all of the robustness, the maturity, the functionality that Juniper has always provided in the networking space, but in a much more tightly integrated and simplified model to consume in this new paradigm of SDN and SD-WAN in specifically.
This sounds like what you've done is you've taken, you haven't said the word contrail yet, but I'm assuming what's happened here is you've taken the contrail technology and actually built an SD-WAN application on that contrail foundation?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note contrail, you know, is a family of products in Juniper at this point. You know, we have Contrail Networking, which was the original Contrail, and which continues to be the Contrail Networking piece in the data center. And Contrail SD-WAN certainly leverages key components of that, but is a kind of a complementary solution for the wide area network that also integrates with the data center solution, but doesn't necessarily require both to be work in tandem.
Got it. Okay. So Contrail is a broader brand with several different things that you can do under that brand. You know, it's an umbrella, so to speak. And under that,
absolutely.
Now we've got an SD-WAN product. And I guess that means if I'm in an enterprise and I want to shop Juniper SD-WAN against Cisco and Silverpeak, and there's a whole long list of SD-WAN vendors out there, I can do that now.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we offer Contrail SD-WAN through both through our MSP and system integrator partners, right, today, as well as direct through our partner and reseller channels, as well as through direct sell to the enterprise, right? So we're heavily engaged in all of the various channels as you would typically expect Juniper to you know do so in a given market segment.
So as an enterprise, I actually have a lot of choices, and this just popped something else into my head. Mm-hmm. I can also go to a managed service provider or maybe just my SP directly, my carrier, and there are SD-WAN offerings there. A lot of those are maybe there. They've been relabeled because there's someone else's technology that the MSP is using to create an SD-WAN offering. What is Juniper's take on those?
Yeah, absolutely, Ethan, and that's a great point. So one of the reasons I think we've taken some time to develop the technology that we're talking about is we see a broader transition in the marketplace, right? We see that, you know, SD-WAN is not a fad, it's not going away, and that the, you know, the multi-billion IP VPN market that a large stake of the SP SP business is built around is going to transition over the next, 5 to 10 years, right? And so one of the things we've done a little bit differently, for example, compared to some of the, other over-the-top players, right, is we worked very closely hand-in-hand with some of our MSP partners to really truly develop an integrated service offering, right? What do I really mean by that, right? What do I mean is that, when you have a legacy or a traditional IPM PLS service, right, from an MSP, and you buy an SD-WAN service, today for the large majority of services through MSPs, they're effectively ships in the night, right? I know service providers who, in fact, deploy your legacy router for your IP VPN service, and they deploy a SD-WAN device from any number of vendors for the SD-WAN service, and they don't necessarily talk to each other, even for the same enterprise, right? They have to go through some convoluted interworking gateway, right? Mm-hmm. And so we said, look, that's really not going to work or scale for some of the large MSP customers. And so we've gone about and sort of worked on a technology and an architecture that really leverages, some of the IP VPN concepts that I mentioned that allow our SD-WAN solution to truly integrate into the service provider managed service offerings for IP VPN today, right? So what that means is that from a managed services perspective, the service provider can offer their end customers best of both worlds, right? And any given site can be on an IP VPN or SD-WAN or both, and effectively, work coherently with each other and have full reachability and connectivity across the board.
So you're saying that if you're in an integrated mode, so it's quite common for customers to have a part of their network with SD-WAN as they do a migration or a deployment, mm-hmm. and then to have the existing or the incumbent WAN. And so you actually now have two WANs, one's with SD-WAN and one's with the other. Now, up until now, most customers have elected to have two WANs. This is my legacy WAN, and then I move that branch over to the new WAN. But that can have problems where two sites that are on the different WANs need to talk to each other and you have to bridge them together. That can be difficult.
Exactly.
Doesn't work for everybody, but it's and that can, if you're migrating to SD-WAN holus bolus, then that's okay. Maybe a little bit of pain is acceptable in the long run. You're much more talking about MSPs, managed service providers. These managed service providers are often divisions of big telcos who think there is the core business of the telco then is to provide bandwidth at scale, like, gigabits, hundreds of gigabits of bandwidth or terabits of bandwidth, and then and connecting at the edge is just a way to use that bandwidth up. These managed service providers are often businesses that provide that last mile and run the WAN for customers. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's ultimately it's about the business of connectivity, right? And the business of connectivity from some of these managed service providers are changing because the technology that is underlying those services are changing, right? Where the cost on a dollar per bit, as is one of the fundamental tenets of SD-WAN for a broadband circuit, is quite frequently an order of magnitude lower than a private lease line or a private WAN circuit, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that cost differential is not going to be sustainable in the market, even from an MSP viewpoint, for an extended period of time.
Yeah, we can't continue to ship routers out to site and send a highly
exactly. You got it. So
a network professional with a mid-level, with certifications and, cost you $75,000 a year to have that. You can't roll them out to site anymore to touch network equipment. That's not going to work at a cost per gig pricing where people can buy unlimited data plans on a smartphone. So this is the driver for SD-WAN. So, but what about enterprises who run their own MPLS overlays? Are they going to be able to use this technology, or is this really a product where enterprise customers should be able to go to their telco and say, I want to see your SD-WAN offering, and then look at that and go, oh, I see they're using the Juniper product there? Or is it something that they could approach you directly for?
Whether the enterprises can leverage this, whether they have, MPLS-based technology or not, right? And the answer to that is they absolutely can, right? Mm-hmm. So whether you have an MPLS-based network or not, the Juniper Contrail SD-WAN solution provides two modes of operation, if you will, right? If to put it in a broad, simplistic manner. One is we can run in a pure overlay manner where all the connections are completely transport agnostic, and we don't make any assumptions on the underlay technology, right? Which is, I think, what you see in most enterprise networking environments today. In another mode is if you want to basically, you know, have a built-out core that is, you know, service-aware that you invested in, and you know, some large enterprises, particularly, you know, big financials and manufacturing companies have this quite often, where they have global backbones that, you know, they've built out for various, you know, security and compliance reasons. You know, you don't necessarily need to extend the overlay all the way across your whole wide area network. You can basically have what we call SD-WAN in the last mile and map the traffic very cleanly into your backbone network with the right SLAs, you know, to transit across the various hub sites you might have.
Right. So this is how MSPs can differentiate themselves from people who are just doing over-the-top services, where Contrail or the idea behind the Juniper product is that the physical network and the SD-WAN should integrate very tightly. It's not an overlay per se. It's much more like an MPLS VRF with its own properties and uniqueness so that I can guarantee a service level around that connectivity.
Exactly.
Right. And then, of course, the other part about it, of course, is you've still got all the other SDN requirements for configuration, zero-touch provisioning, automated configuration, visibility. You still need monitoring and so forth.
Yeah, and of course, we do all of that and more, right? But I just want to touch on that integration viewpoint because, as I said, we see it as not just a pure over-the-top play, although a lot of MSPs are offering pure over-the-top as well because of, you know, market dynamics today. You know, some customers that we're working with have chosen to go on a much more integrated route. And a case in point that I can certainly mention here is one of the customers we're working with in the UK is Vodafone. In Vodafone UK, where they're looking to leverage Juniper technology for SD-WAN to basically have a much more integrated offering for both their, you know, existing IP VPN customers as well as their new greenfield customers.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tony, for the people who are looking at bringing their own SD-WAN solution in-house, they want to evaluate Juniper SD-WAN. Let's dive into this, how this works. Mm-hmm. So let's start at a high level here. Some things we've already hinted at, but at a high level, what is the SD-WAN product? Is it a router? Is it software? If I'm a Juniper customer and I've got a bunch of Junos boxes out there, do I enable it with a license? Do I have to buy a controller? Give us kind of the high-level overview of what the product consists of.
Yeah. So the product consists of, you know, four key components, right? The first is that obviously involves an endpoint, right? What we call the SD-WAN endpoint, and that's typically a Junos-based router. It can also include a gateway, which is an aggregation device, and we distinguish between the endpoints and the gateways. And it includes a controller and it includes an orchestrator, right? And the orchestrator and the controller are two distinct components. The controller is kind of a core part of the solution. And the orchestrator is something that we include, but also we support integration with third-party orchestrators to our API as an example, right? So the solution, you know, is based on these four components.
Well, so back up a second. Can you differentiate the orchestrator and the controller? Because in my brain, they sound like they do the same thing.
Yeah, I would say the orchestrator is kind of more the UI aspect of it, right? And the controller is really the brains behind the operation. So you can do everything that you would do through the UI, through the API directly into the controller. So we have, for example, with some of our partner customers like NEC and others, we've integrated their orchestrators onto our controller, right? So that, you know, additional orchestration systems can control our SD-WAN solution end-to-end. And we see that quite common on larger deployments. Although on sort of more traditional enterprise deployments, you know, we see the orchestrator and controller being, you know, run in tandem.
I think I got it. The orchestrator is what the end user is going to interact with. It's going to speak northbound API to the controller. The controller is going to talk southbound to all.
Correct.
You call them endpoints, right? Is your terminology?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, the other key aspect of the solution that I kind of want to touch on, Ethan, is that you know our SD-WAN solution is completely open and standards based, right? And what I mean by that is, and I've touched on this a number of times in the prior questions. Is that, you know, for the data path, we use standard IPsec with MPLS-based NCAP or GRE-based NCAP if you don't want to use IPsec for a private connection. We use NetConf and Yang-based models, as you are familiar with, for Junos for configuration management from the controller southbound to the endpoints. And we use MPBGP between the endpoints and the controller for centralized route control, right? And we use REST-based API northbound from the controller to integrate with our existing orchestrator or external orchestrators. So the system is very much open. You know, customers who already have existing Juniper devices can very seamlessly, you know, add a license on their Juniper devices, introduce the controller, and move from a non-SD-WAN kind of traditional legacy mode of operation to a full automated SD-WAN controller-based solution with their existing, you know, SRX, NFX, or MX-based Juniper platforms.
I was just going to ask you, like, if I've got an MX router, I can throw a license on it. Now it's an endpoint. I tell it about the controller, and now I've got an endpoint that I can do SD-WAN things with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's okay. One of our, I would say, our key distinctions here versus, you know, some of the, you know, or many of the newer vendors in this space, right? Our SD-WAN solution, you know, goes from 100 megabits to hundreds of gigabits of scale, right? So you might say, who has SD-WAN? There's probably at least 60 vendors who have SD-WAN. If you ask who has SD-WAN at 100 gigabits of scale today, and you will narrow the spectrum down quite quickly, right? For example, our MX960 routers are our SD-WAN gateways and are fully capable of supporting 160 gigabits of 256 AES encrypted traffic when running as an SD-WAN gateway mode, right?
Yeah, effectively, so, you're saying whatever the Juniper hardware is that you've got out there, whatever its throughput limitations are for encrypted traffic and so on, you've got that now with an SD-WAN orchestration layer on top of it. Hardware throughput is you've got all that power, and now you're just you've got this orchestration layer that is automating that for you.
Absolutely. And we've also gone a step further, Ethan, in that, you know, as you're probably familiar, Junos has a lot of functionality that we've developed for specific customer needs over the last 10 to 20 years, right? And if you look at a lot of the newer SD-WAN solutions today, they're much more simplistic, but doesn't have all of the functionality, right? So when we went about looking at designing a solution, we were kind of at a conundrum to say, look, do we make the solution simple by cutting out functionality, or do we expose all the functionality to the user so that you can have effectively a power mode, right? And we ended up doing a bit of both. And the way we've addressed that is we've simplified the model where when you're running, you know, in a normal operational mode, right, for, you know, 90% of the use cases, the controller and the orchestrator exposes all of the functionality that you would need to, you know, effectively run and manage your SD-WAN network. So whether it's, you know, quality of service, whether it's you using PKI for your IPsec authentication, whether you're using GCM ciphers for your IPsec encryption, or whether you're using weighted, you know, round-robin queuing for your quality of service, those basic things you can configure through your SD-WAN orchestrator / controller through the UI, right? But as you're probably familiar, we have a lot more functionality in Junos underneath the cover. So we were like, how do we, you know, effectively get the power users to leverage this? And we came up with this concept of templating, right? And what templating does is it allows you to define any Junos-based config and standardize it into a replicatable template that you can very quickly automate across, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of your sites that are specific to your enterprise deployment. So, you know, if your enterprise has a very unique VLAN identifier that maps into a DiffServ code point, and that's a very specific configuration that you want to have and maintain within your enterprise, and that is not, you know, supportable out of the box within our controller orchestration framework, it's very easy to define a template, and the template can be resolved at runtime, you know, when the template gets applied to the site, when that configuration is pushed to the device. So that way we're able to meet, you know, the midstream or the mainstream use cases for most customers, while still exposing the power and the flexibility and the feature richness that Junos really provides underneath the covers, which we didn't really want to, you know, leave behind as we moved into this new world of SDN and automation.
Now, this is interesting. Now, I'm a former MX and SRX administrator. Now, my MX boxes particularly, I thought of them as like a Swiss Army knife. I could do anything with those things. All the different NCAP types, the tunneling and encryption and the routing capabilities meant I could do a lot of stuff. And I was wondering, okay, so if I load on the SD-WAN license on that MX router and make it an SD-WAN endpoint, do I cede control of it back to the controller now, where I have to use the templates and everything to configure the box soup to nuts? Or is it just that for the SD-WAN part, the orchestrator is going to take care of that for me?
Yeah. So we have two modes of operation for the controller and orchestrator, right? The first is, you know, fully controlled, right? And the endpoints are always fully controlled, right? And that's been that are typically the branch devices that sit in the branch sites, right? We also have a kind of a partial controlled mode of operation for the gateways, right? And these are typically your MX-based routers, as you correctly pointed out, Ethan, right? Because in a lot of cases, you know, customers have very exotic, unique configuration on their MX devices that you may not necessarily want to mess with, right? And so there we provide a way for you to import and kind of merge your existing config and not overwrite that existing config with the SD-WAN config that the orchestrator and the controller effectively manages, right, on your MX devices. And that's traditionally for the gateways, because the gateways are serving multiple purposes in a typically a large network environment, and not perhaps dedicated for that SD-WAN termination functionality alone. But if the gateway was deployed in an SD-WAN gateway mode alone, we would manage the gateway end-to-end as well. So we can run both scenarios, to your point, Ethan.
Okay, but again, in the branch, I'm flipping a switch. I'm going from managing it as a, you know, as a one-off device, and now I'm saying, all right, I really want this thing to be an SD-WAN endpoint.
Yes.
And maybe it's going to do some other functionality there, like not all traffic is going to go through the SD-WAN tunnel fabric. Some of it's going to get dumped to the internet directly, perhaps, and need a NAT. And the orchestrator is going to handle all that stuff for me. I'm going to be using these templates that have been provided by Juniper to help me with the most common scenarios and so on.
Yeah. So if you had anything that is custom, that was not a standard SD-WAN-based configuration, that would be the mode of operation for the branch sites. You're absolutely right.
Got it. Okay.
But we expect, you know, for the most brownfield to greenfield customers, as I say, 80-90% of that wouldn't be required. But we have customers, as you know, from, you know, our, you know, broad-based deployments that are running very unique configurations, and we cater for those customers as well.
All right, Tony, I want to set you up with kind of a longish question, so bear with me. But I want to paint how most SD-WAN products are deployed, and then you could highlight for us the similarities and differences between the Juniper solution here. So, in our experience, we've talked to a lot of SD-WAN vendors, and most SD-WAN products, there's a group of forwarding devices, which you're calling endpoints and gateways. There's multiple circuits. That's all managed by a central policy engine, controller and orchestrator in this case. Then you got some human. Some network operator is going to create a policy. The policy engine is going to push that policy down to those SD-WAN endpoints, and the SD-WAN endpoints are monitoring their circuits to deliver applications in accordance with this policy, meeting SLAs and so on. Oh, this circuit can deliver this application in accordance with the SLA. I will forward traffic across that circuit, that sort of thing. And then you also get zero-touch provisioning, performance and compliance reporting, and so on. So if that people that are familiar with that have heard that SD-WAN model before, maybe they're deploying that SD-WAN model, how would you compare and contrast the Juniper SD-WAN solution with that familiar story that folks have heard?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we do all of that, of course, Ethan, but I think we've taken it a little bit of a step further, right, in two specific areas that I will elaborate, right? The first is, you know, for quality of, you know, link quality measurements and whatnot, we've come up with a mechanism where we are able to measure the quality of individual applications uniquely by application type. And what I mean by that is that we can, you know, distinguish the quality of experience, and we call this technology AppQoE, application quality of experience. We can distinguish the quality of experience of a, you know, a Skype call versus a Office 365 connection on the same link, even though they may be perhaps, you know, going through the same transit endpoints and whatnot, right? And in the system today, through our DPI engine, we support over 3,700 plus individual application types. So this allows a very granular report of the application performance and the analytics that an end network operator or a application operator would like to see from their network regarding, you know, typical behavior or, you know, troubleshooting and whatnot, right? So that's one area. The second area is that most of the time, the link path determination when to use a particular link is determined by the endpoint based on the SLA, as you correctly pointed out, Ethan. And we do that too in majority of cases, right? Where we measure the SLA of the links for the individual applications, and there's a policy defined by the controller slash orchestrator saying, hey, this is the minimal SLA, and if this SLA is not met for a certain period of time, And your window size exceeds that period of time, and if a better path is available, please, you know, use the better path. And we do that very effectively. But we've taken that a little bit further as well, where we've said, you know, that's all great when you're looking at the next hop, but what happens when you look at really large networks, right? And as I pointed out, we've started this from a very a broad, you know, large network mindset, where you have, you know, transit points between perhaps different regions, and you have very high speed links between these transit points, and there might be any number of ways between these transit points to get from point A to B, right? So now do you not only have multiple links from your endpoint to perhaps your gateway, but you also have multiple paths between your gateways and the other gateways that might be across different geographies or regions. Mm. And this is a pretty common type of network architecture in large enterprise deployments, right? Particularly in financials, which have, you know, branches throughout the world. You have these regional hub sites, and all of the branches aggregate into the regional hub sites, and the hub sites are either partially meshed or fully meshed with each other to a backbone. And so,
it's not just a hub and spoke, right? A lot of folks, especially with smaller shops, they may be thinking about they've got one, maybe two main sites. It's hub and spoke. There's not a lot of choices about how to route your traffic in between sites, especially major hub sites. But right, with those really large companies, then now you've got at least a partial mesh that you can work with and route traffic in different ways and get different traffic latency, jitter, and so on results depending on how you push that traffic.
Right. So what we do there is we do not just the last mile, we monitor the SLA across the hub sites, right? But keep in mind, these hub sites could be very high speed links. It could be 10 gig links, it could be even 100 gig links, right? And so you don't have the luxury of doing DPI at those intermediate hub sites because a DPI operation is very expensive. So we've gone with an architecture where we always do the DPI and the application recognition at the endpoints, the first hop into the SD-WAN network. But we monitor by hop, and we're able to map specific applications into overlay networks that are carried through the intermediate hub sites. And we use the controller to basically determine the routing between these hub sites based on SLA.
It's a form of traffic engineering.
Exactly. You got it. So I think, our SD-WAN solution, is really, taking that extra step where we do SD-WAN not just in the last mile, but we do SD-WAN in the middle mile as well, so that we can provide a complete end-to-end SD-WAN view for a large enterprise, geographically dispersed network.
Which makes sense considering the legacy of how the original Contrail technology was used in service provider networks, very large scale, that feature would come in. That makes a lot of sense. Now there's some other Juniper SD-WAN, Contrail SD-WAN features here. You've mentioned open, that there's, APIs and everything is standards-based and so on. You mentioned application, the ability to uniquely identify applications. But another point you had made earlier that we didn't really get into, integrated security. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the other third pillar of our SD-WAN solution with Contrail SD-WAN is integrated security. And the reason we decided to use our security platforms as one of the fundamental building blocks for SD-WAN is because we saw that the need for terminating broadband circuits directly in the branch was only going to accelerate, right? As the cost differential that we talked about, becomes much more mainstream in the market. So what does that really mean? What it means is that, as you're terminating these broadband circuits into your branch sites, right, versus perhaps your data centers or your termination sites, you're really broadening out your security perimeter, and you're broadening out your threat surface that, you can potentially be attacked on, right? And we said, well, this is not going to work for a large enterprise who are going to be, want to be more security conscious and not less security conscious, because you're not going to have this, push and pull tension between the networking team and the security ops team who are going to say, no, you can't put internet circuits into your branch site because that will inherently, compromise my security posture. Right? It was just not going to fly. And your CSO will certainly not improve that kind of compliance, right? And we see that very commonly where, like in financials, where the only broadband circuit that is used is for guest Wi-Fi, right? And nothing else goes through broadband, right? And for compliance and security concerns, right? So we said, we need to relook at this. And so we said, let's look at, having that security stack distributed across towards the endpoints, right? But by distributing the endpoints, you get all the functionality, but you still, don't have an effective management story, right? So we built the management platform and the orchestration for an SD-WAN controller to have the full capability to manage all of the security functionality on the platform as well. Right. So when you enable an SD-WAN policy, just in the same way, you can enable a next-gen firewall policy. You can enable a unified threat management policy. You can enable advanced threat protection policy or ATP.
My endpoint's an SRX in this part of the conversation, then I can, would I what, turn all of my control and management over to the SD-WAN orchestration platform? Not just I can, but I would. That would be the desirable thing for me to do.
So we allow you to manage all of the security capabilities on the endpoints through the same single pane of glass as the SD-WAN policies. So effectively, we have the full policy management for all of the security functionality available in the SD-WAN orchestrator, along with all the SD-WAN functionality today.
Okay. So what about for people with the, like you mentioned that sometimes there's a divide between NetOps and security operations. Are those folks going to be sharing the same console, maybe using RBAC to separate functions, something
like
that?
That's a very important point. And so our one thing I didn't touch on is, you know, our system is fully multi-tenant. So as you would expect, because we're catering for both, you know, large MSP type customers as well as, you know, large enterprise customers. And one of the aspects of multi-tenancy is we have full role-based access controlled to the individual object and policy level. So what that means is that, you know, I can have a user created that is only able to modify and manage my security policies and have a different user assigned with a different role that is only able to manage the network devices and the networking within a branch, for example. So yes, we do have that level of granularity in the system today.
Okay. Now, multi-tenancy means can mean a couple of different things. One is just the context you supplied where from management level, you're separating who can do what. But then also you could be building multi-tenant networks where there's different tunnel fabrics assigned to different groups and then mapped into particular VLANs or VRFs on the remote ends. Do we have a multi-tenancy function like that with the solution?
We do. So our solution is multi-tenant, I would say, at every level of the stack, right? Our solution is multi-tenant at the management level, at the controller level, as well as the data plane level. So let me explain what that means. So in terms of the management level, we obviously can have separation of, and this is in the context of a managed service provider, as you would expect, right? But sometimes it's also equivalent for large enterprises that have different divisions. So I run into, enterprises that have, various subdivisions or business units, and they manage their networks a little bit within different teams. And so that can be applicable here as well. But in essence, we provide tenant level separation. So you can have customer A and customer B. And customer A's services and functions are completely transparent and inaccessible to customer B, and vice versa. And we have a global administrator who manages the system as a whole. Then at the controller level, we are also fully multi-tenant at the controller level. So what I mean by that is that, unlike other solutions in the market that run a controller-based architecture, as you would expect, our controller is effectively running as a virtual route reflector with MPBGP. We use MPBGP to handle all of the overlapping address space across multiple endpoints effectively, right? Because we do tenant-level separation through constructs of VRFs, as we already talked about. So a single controller can manage multiple overlapping addresses across multiple tenants effectively. Yeah. And the third I want to kind of point out is that our hubs can be multi-tenant, right? So that, for example, an MX as a gateway that I mentioned earlier can be shared across customer A and customer B. And they're separated through, tenant separation at the VRF level. And then we also, extend the separation into what we call network segmentation, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Ethan, in the SD-WAN space, right? So for a single tenant, you can have, for example, a guest Wi-Fi network, a corporate network, and maybe a point of sale network at the endpoint that maps into individual VLANs. And that's carried across a shared IPsec tunnel, but is separated through MPLS, as you would expect, back into the hub, right? So we have separation at the segmentation level within the tenant as well. And of course, each tenant can have different policies within the segments and whatnot. So yes, we have multi-tenancy, all the way from the control, the management, and into the data plane.
Got it. That was a very complete answer. Thank you.
as you would expect, we've thought this through, right?
Well, you guys have often had to deal with the most demanding or complicated scenarios just because of who some of your customers are. So I'm not surprised that all of that is there. One interesting point to clarify. Now, there are some people that maybe they're deep in the Juniper ecosystem and they've used some Contrail stuff before, and they're thinking, oh, so I'm managing this with, you know, the Contrail virtual infrastructure manager. Is that what we're talking about here for this, or is this a different management layer?
So this is a little bit distinct to Contrail networking, as I mentioned, right? We interwork with Contrail networking. So let me kind of talk a little bit about that, right? So if you do have Contrail networking with Contrail Cloud in the data center, our orchestrator can also manage virtual network functions and service chaining with our, you know, Contrail networking SDN controller, right? So at that point, the alignment is at the orchestrator level. We have an SD-WAN controller, which is managing the WAN. And then we have a data center controller that's managing overlays in the data center. And the orchestrator is able to stitch the overlays from the data center into the WAN through a gateway. And the orchestrator handles that today, right? And so that's where the technology that I think you're referring to in terms of traditional Contrail is, you know, integrated into the overarching solution that we're talking about here from an SD-WAN perspective, going into the wide area network.
But just that reminder that Contrail is an umbrella name that encompasses several products that aren't all the same thing. They're actually distinct products in the line.
Absolutely. A common misconception, which I probably should mention, is for Contrail SD-WAN, you don't need an OpenStack environment. You don't need, you know, an SDN controller that is distinct and separate. You know, it's just a single server. The controller, you know, can run on a single server plus the orchestrator. Or if you want to horizontally scale out, we can horizontally scale out, you know, the Contrail SD-WAN solution as well.
Well, one more quick question about SD-WAN capabilities. HA, I'm assuming that because I got routers and SRXs that I'm very comfortable with building HA clusters and so on, I can do the same thing here?
You can absolutely do that. And so we support kind of a unique type of HA, which is cluster HA, right? Which is a far superior mode of HA on the CP devices than your traditional, you know, VRP or HSRP-based HA, right? Where, for example, in a cluster mode, you know, in traditionally on a dual CP type environment for HA site, both CPs are actively forwarding traffic, and you can have up to 8 WAN links terminating across 2 CPEs, and they're acting as a single unified forwarding plane. And there's a cross sort of control and fabric connection between the two. So that state is shared between the forwarding elements across the two different CPE devices, right?
Which is really a big deal for people that are used to active standby, where they're basically abandoning one of their circuits. It's going to sit there idle until they got to switch over to
it. Not just that. I mean, your standby CPE is effectively not doing anything at that point. So here, you're actively forwarding on all WAN circuits all the time, and you're using effectively the full power of all the CPEs that you have at the branch site until you have a failure, at which the system transparently fails over to the active unit with, you know, minimal loss of traffic, and then you can replace the failed unit, you know, at your discretion.
Yeah.
And bring the system back online.
I'm assuming it goes without saying that the controller is also HA.
Yeah, the controller is fully HA, and the orchestrator is microservices based. So I should point out, we didn't really talk about scale that much, but you know, we effectively easily scale up to 10,000 endpoints per system today. And we think we can go much higher as needed. You know, as you would expect, this is for a much, you know, fairly large types of deployments. And then we're also talking to customers that say, hey, that's great. You have 10,000, but, you know, my site's only 250 sites. And we scale down effectively where, as I mentioned, you can run it on a single server for, you know, a couple of hundred site deployment as well, right? And so we effectively address all ends of the spectrum. But, you know, we started off building kind of the Cadillac version, if you will, right? Because we felt that that was the harder goal to achieve, and that would be the foundation of the technology, and we've done that. And so now we're really, you know, bringing that solution to some of the less demanding use cases and smaller size deployments for some of our other customers.
One question about cloud integration then. Well, I'll just let you take it where it needs to go. But there's a few pieces here. One would be, I have cloud services that I'm using. You know, can the solution optimize for SaaS traffic, for example? And then for services that I'm running, maybe it's, you know, in my AWS VPC and I'm trying to leverage SD-WAN optimized traffic there. Are there integrations there?
Yeah, there absolutely is. So as we discussed, our SD-WAN endpoint is based on our SRX, and we've had the virtual SRX available on both Amazon Marketplace as well as Azure for some time. And the controller fully supports AWS integration today natively and into the VPC, and we're working on Azure. So what that means is that the customer is able to go to the SD-WAN portal, put in their VPC credentials, go through a CloudFormation template, very painless exercise, and you know, the controller ends up spinning the SD-WAN endpoint within the customer context VPC on AWS and establishing the SD-WAN overlay tunnels back into their enterprise. And we support up to, you know, four multiple overlays across diverse paths. And we do all of the traditional security as well as SLA-based, you know, path selection from the VPC back to the enterprise at that point across the public network.
Okay. Now what about SaaS? We got focused on the VPC stuff, but let's, you know, mm-hmm. if I'm an Office 365 customer, is there any magic or observance of Office 365 endpoints that I can optimize across a particular internet circuit or another?
Yeah, so we do differentiate between different SaaS apps. So we're able to differentiate, for example, between, you know, Microsoft or Office 365 SharePoint versus Office 365 Outlook. And based on the DPI engine that we have on the endpoints, and then we can take, you know, routing decisions whether to, you know, put the traffic on a particular link or do a local breakout. If you're looking to, you know, offload that traffic from your overlay into your underlay, and you can do that, you know, either, you know, dynamically based on SLA or based on a specific policy that you dictate from the orchestrator. So we do support SaaS apps from that perspective as well.
Got it. That makes sense. As soon as you said, you know, the application engine, recognition engine takes care of that more or less. It's like, oh, yes, that makes perfect sense. So, Tony, I got another functionality question for you, and that is the layer one, the boring stuff, actually plugging in circuits. So a lot of the SD-WAN providers out there are giving you Ethernet and maybe a USB interface where you can shove in a LTE circuit or something like that. But you're talking about your SD-WAN endpoints being like SRXs and MXs and stuff like that, where I know from my own history, you got a lot of modules you can shove in there. I'm assuming that's all still available to me. Is that true?
Absolutely, Ethan. And I think this is one area where Juniper Contrail SD-WAN does differentiate strongly with some of the new entrants, right? A lot of the new entrants really only provide maybe LTE and Ethernet handoff, right? And we have built-in LTE across all of our portfolio, SRX and NFX on the CPE side, right? You know, fully qualified global, you know, frequency band support with all the necessary certifications, et cetera. So that is available and shipping today for LTE. We obviously have Ethernet as everyone else does, but we also have support for sort of more exotic connectivity types, which, you know, may not be typically mainstream, but a lot of customers still require in some parts of the world. For example, ADSL, VDSL support. We support that through a pluggable SFP module on our NFX platforms, right? We support PPPoE, you know, from those of us who've been in the industry for quite some time, right? Mm-hmm. So those mechanisms are all there, right? And then on the SRX side, you know, we have even, you know, traditional, you know, TDM interfaces as well. So I think, you know, SD-WAN, it doesn't need to be about, you know, breaking with the old and in with the new, although it sometimes can be appealing to do so. But you can still have your cake and eat it too, right? And that's really what, you know, we are focused on, because our customers what we say, what we hear is that, you know, yes, you know, Ethernet is the wave of the future for branch connectivity, but, you know, in some of my sites, I can't get an Ethernet drop from my local provider, right? So for those sites, unfortunately, you know, if you go with some of these other solutions, you're stuck with a two box solution. And with Juniper's, we have a fully integrated availability of all those interfaces on the SD-WAN platforms today.
All right. Give me a sense of migration then. So you mentioned that one of the cells is for folks in some cases, they've got a Juniper network out there already and they can turn on SD-WAN functionality. But then we mentioned that some of the endpoints are going to get turned over. The control of it is going to get turned over to the orchestrator. So what's that look like for me if I'm trying to migrate into this environment? Is it disruptive? Is it a one-sided a time thing? How do I go about this?
Yeah, so I'll address that in two parts, Ethan. So one is that if you're an existing Juniper customer with Juniper endpoints, right? I think we kind of touched on this a little bit. And, you know, you can continue, you know, to have some of your endpoints running, you know, kind of a traditional branch router mode, and then turn over controller-based functionality to a subset of endpoints. And as your level of comfort and you know, robustness of the solution within your environment grows, you can gradually transition that network to, you know, fully controller-based SD-WAN over time, right? I think that's kind of the easier of the two scenarios. The more common scenario that we see is the equipment is traditionally by a different vendor, right? Not a Juniper equipment. And so they're asking, well, you know, how do we introduce Juniper SD-WAN, but I still preserve my, you know, branch routing capability, right? You know, and for the large part, it is from the other, you know, primary networking vendor that we all know about. So in this situation, I think Juniper provides a very unique value proposition. One is that you can basically migrate all of your legacy routing functionality effectively into the Juniper router to act as a traditional branch router. And we are fully functional, as I pointed out, right from the get-go, right? We are not a cut-down router. We have all of the functionality from, you know, quality of service to, you know, ISIS, right? Fully supported on the platform. So, you know, we can do that branch routing functionality day one. The second is, let's say you don't want to do that, but you want to gradually migrate to your SD-WAN. Well, in that situation, you can continue to keep your existing branch router, but you would introduce the Juniper SD-WAN device behind the existing branch router, where the existing branch router would basically do the underlay connectivity, if you will. And the Juniper SD-WAN endpoint will do the overlay connectivity and the traffic management and the policy enforcement in the branch, right, along with the security piece. So,
yeah.
So at that point, you know, you introduce that in a much more seamless way. And then over time, you can, you know, potentially migrate off that branch router, the legacy one, if you so choose.
And that's a common scenario. We've heard that one before from lots of folks that in the SD-WAN space that have to deal with this, where, mm-hmm. yeah, that legacy router is going to stay in place, but you just start moving functionality off of that branch router and into your new SD-WAN, in this case, a Juniper SD-WAN endpoint. And the edge router does less and less for you over time until really it's just a circuit termination point and providing L3 forwarding, and that's about it.
Yeah, and our goal here is, as I mentioned previously, you know, we have a lot of the circuit termination capability as well, but in a lot of cases, that router may have been depreciated, so it's just, you know, waiting for end of sale or end of life, at which point you can, you know, cut over the circuits directly to the SD-WAN endpoint as well.
All right, Tony, one thought for folks that are running smaller networks, they're listening to this conversation and they're evaluating SD-WAN and they're going, oh my gosh, the Juniper solution sounds like this big beastly thing that's just for really big companies and it's not for me. But that's actually, hopefully we didn't scare anybody into thinking that this is some massively complex solution, because in fact, this is packaged for the mid-market as well.
Absolutely, Ethan. And, you know, I think we spent a great chunk of time, you know, talking about the technology. After all, this is a technology-focused podcast, right? So we did get into the weeds, so to speak, if you will. But I think it should be hopefully clear that, you know, the technology that we use from the largest providers' networks is effectively, you know, just as effective in smaller network environments. And the key point here is that with the orchestrator and the controller, it's very simple and easy to use. So even if you don't know what a lot of the 3 or 4 letter acronyms mean, the, you know, with Contrail SD-WAN, you can get up and running within a day once you get the controller and the orchestrator and the endpoints deployed, right? Without not knowing all of the technology that is behind the solution. But I think the key difference here I would point out is that the technology allows your enterprise to start small and grow big. And so we offer a unique differentiation where, you know, the technology provides from the smallest networks to the largest networks that ability to scale as the needs of your enterprise grow, as your business grows over time.
Very good. And a great way to end this podcast with Juniper about their SD-WAN solution. Now, Tony, is there a landing page or something that you would direct folks to if they want to dig in more and understand other things about Juniper SD-WAN?
Yeah, just go to juniper.net/SD-WAN.
Very good. Now, Tony, are you a social person? Do you tweet or blog or anything you'd like to mention to folks?
Unfortunately, I am not a social person, Ethan, but I'm very easily reached via my email. It's tsarath@juniper.net.
My goodness, he put his email address right out there. So harass Tony, folks. Ask him your SD-WAN questions. And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Packet Pushers podcast, now in our 9th year. Our special thanks to Juniper for sponsoring us today. And if you ring them up to talk about SD-WAN, do us a favor. Would you tell them you heard about it on Packet Pushers? We'd appreciate that. Now, if your total interaction with us is this podcast channel, hey, you're missing out. Visit packetpushers.net, explore, and find out everything we have to offer, almost all of which is absolutely free. We got newsletters, several other deeply nerdy podcast channels, blogs from the global community of network engineers, and more. And we're on the socials at Packet Pushers, Twitter and LinkedIn mostly. Follow us there, and we will tell you things we think that you would like to know. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.